This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
What up, Bankstown? Hey, how we doing? It's a Thursday on the Press Box. Now the little people that like to put meat in their mouth are exiting the studio so we can have a good show for 3 hours.
Okay, Matt Barnes.
Well, you know, Charlie's been known to follow Matt Barnes.
He was making fun of you a little bit for your choice of burger from Bex.
Why does everybody got to hate on me? If your choice is to put meat in your mouth, then go for it. But if it's mine to not go that route, what's the problem?
There is no problem. Your choice is the chicken burger.
Yeah.
And
there
most people
be anything wrong with that.
No, but it is unusual because most people who go to burger spots eat burgers, like hamburgers.
But first of all, let's clarify. I didn't go to a burger spot. They came to us.
That's fine. Okay. But when you go to Bex Prime and you're going to order a burger, are you going to order a chicken burger or are you going to order a regular burger?
Chicken sandwich with grilled mushrooms, grilled onions, ketchup, of course. Fantastic.
Did you berate them about putting enough ketchup in the chicken sandwich?
No, because I can put ketchup on myself.
Okay.
I mean, let me ask.
Look, I just want you to know, Charlie was the one that was picking on you, not me.
Oh, I already told him. Because I walked down the hallway and everybody's telling me, hey, your boy Palillo's killing you. I'm like, what the hell is he killing me for? Because you got a chicken burger. I mean, there's a lot of things in life you can kill me on, but a chicken burger? The fact that they still make female larges in Dynamo golf shirts from the 80s.
Oh, you're going to go that route.
Yeah.
Female larges is what you're going
to. Yeah.
Put some respect on the Dynamo name. They just got a lot of money. Well, at least the guy who sold it or the people who sold it.
That's what they tell you. You think James Harden got some of that because he was a owner?
Oh, we were talking about that. Him, Eric Schaefer, Oscar De La Hoya, I think.
That's right, De La Hoya, yeah.
So I don't know if they get a big chunk back because I really don't know what the percentages is. Because you know why? Because my name is not Santa and I'm not reading every little article that has everything to do with the Houston Dynamo. So, but not Santa is excited because he wants new ownership. And this new guy, Ted Siegel or Seagal, depending on how you pronounce his last name, is taking over.
Yeah. So here's the thing. By the way, text line, I didn't put any meat in my mouth, so you can stuff that because
you put chicken meat in your mouth.
No, because I didn't eat it.
Well, you're about to put chicken meat in your mouth.
You don't know. No, that's because I told you that I've been going vegan with Lisa for the last week and a half. So before you guys go jumping the gun again and then being critical, just slow your roll. Now, from the Dynamo perspective, Nick, here's the thing. I don't think Harden ever put a cent of his own money into that deal.
Really?
Yeah, because Harden's an Adidas guy, and Adidas is massive in soccer. So Adidas wanted a local presence with some of the MLS teams, and so I believe it was kind of like a brokered deal to where James puts his name on it. Adidas probably backed whatever the percentage was.
Oh, okay.
And James is a soccer fan.
Well, it does make sense because he was – not only was he nationally known, he was super locally known, probably still is, because he's only, the first season removed from being in a Houston Rockets jersey. He had businesses here. He had ties here. He did the basketball goals thing where he spent like $250,000. So not only is he a big name, he's a star, and he had a local tie. I can see why. And he was attached to Adidas. I can see why that worked out. I don't know what the exact details were, and I don't know if they're happy about this deal. And you know what? I'm not sure James Harden is like, yeah, I'm taking that money to the bank anyway, because it's $400 million for the entire team. And will James Harden make more than that over his career? He might.
What's the total figure?
$400 million? I think he'll smash that, right? Because he's already had two over $100 million contracts.
Well, so you take the Adidas contract alone, which was a couple hundred mil, and then, you take the Supermax deal that he got before he left here that he's carrying with him to Brooklyn.
So he might break $400 million. Yeah. I'm just talking about basketball paychecks.
Yeah. Well, basketball paychecks, maybe not, but basketball and sneaker deal alone. And then he's part owner of the company and gets paid by Body Armor. And he has the gummy beards and the gummy, whatever you call those, the candies.
The trolley? Was it the trolley?
Yep.
One
or the other. He's got a couple of gigs where I think if you include the shoe deal and some endorsements as well as his basketball contracts, when all is said and done, I think he's going to be over $400 million.
He is right now at $186 million total.
And the Adidas deal...
Just in basketball paychecks.
Not including the shoe deal?
Nope. This is just basketball paychecks going back to Oklahoma City.
Okay. The Harden Adidas deal, I want to say, was in the neighborhood of $360 million over the course of... here it is. $200 million deal with Adidas.
Wow.
And since his signing, the stock has risen over 40%. He gets a portion of that with all the shoes with his name on it. And
so he'll make more than $400 million. Long story short, whatever he's getting from the Dynamo from that $400 million sale is a fraction of what he's made in his career. You know, which is, you know, so my point is, I'm not sure he really cares either way if it was sold or not. Maybe he gets it out of his head because he's not in Houston anymore.
So 13 years for the $200 million. That's just the shoes.
Wow. God, I wish I had a shoe deal.
And I got to imagine that, I don't know if that isn't inclusive of every Harden signature shoe, because like Charles and some of the guys, T-Mac, Iverson, especially because they're still selling them, the Kobe's, they got a contract with a fee, and then they also got a percentage of every shoe sold with their name on it.
Wow. Well, that's all. See, that just adds up. I mean, I don't think anybody in the basketball world has made money on shoes more than Michael Jordan, I would assume.
Jordan 1, Bron 2, Durant, remember, they had that bidding war where Under Armour came at him, and then Nike matched it, and that was $360 mil. So that was, he's probably third, but I got to believe Kobe, because the Kobe's have, you know, especially right now. They just took off.
Yeah.
So even though they didn't renew the Nike deal, I got to believe Kobe made a boatload off of Nike.
Yeah.
So that's
how come nobody will give me a shoe deal?
Well, because you got to be athletic.
We'll call it the horns.
Or you could be like Tony Hawk or Yeezy. I don't know.
Well, how come what's his name got one? Kevin Hart got a shoe deal. And he's a comedian.
He's got a clothing deal called like Flathletics or something like that.
He might. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's the first stand-up comedian to ever get a shoe deal. I could be wrong on that.
He has a deal with Nike. I think you're right. But then he also has his own clothing line now.
Called Flat something?
Something like Flathletics.
Well, he's always big in his own like wardrobe and flat. Say it again.
It's like Flathletics or something.
Flathletics. He's always been big in his own wardrobe, so... Like, he loves clothes. He says he has a problem and he shops and he buys too much clothes. He's been on record saying that. So I can see that. I can see him starting his own clothing line. I mean, for a while there, he was not just a big name in comedy. He was just kind of a big name overall. You know what I mean? And it kind of went across other industries like movies and all these appearances and stuff like that. So he did well for himself. But just getting one shoe deal is incredible. And especially when you talk about some of the other basketball players. And I don't mean to make this a shoe discussion. This just kind of twirled into that.
Yeah.
But some of these guys that don't have big names in the NBA, Joel, that have these shoe deals, I'm like, why? But even if they're not a massive, massive star, sometimes it's worth it to give a shoe deal to, I don't know, maybe an up-and-coming player or someone who's not quite a star but still is considered a good star or good player in the NBA.
Here's the thing, Nick, and it's Fabletics or something. It's F-A-B-E-letics.
Yeah.
That's Kevin Hart's athletic clothing company.
But it sounds like a sports, like a... It doesn't sound like for fashion, like style.
It's athletic clothing. It's like gym shorts and running shorts and T-shirts.
Okay.
And it's like dry fit. It's a different kind of dry fit.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
To what you were saying about with the players, I think what people's misconception is that in a lot of cases, pretty much everybody in the league gets a shoe deal. But the majority of them, I would say 80 to 85% of the deals are straight trade deals. Like, you agree and sign on the dotted line to be a Nike guy. In exchange for that, we give you $5,000 worth of Nike clothing every year. And we give you all your shoes. It's basically all just trade. Okay. Only the really big names. Or in the case of some of like the startup, like you and I were talking about when Puma came on the scene. And they were just looking for guys that were going to wear the new Puma line when they brought it back.
Right.
And so Boogie Cousins and they took a shot at Bagley III from the Kings, and that failed miserably. But some guys are Puma guys. Oh, by the way, J. Cole has his own Puma signature shoe now.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see a bunch of hip-hop artists getting it and stuff like that. But the trade deal thing that you just mentioned is interesting, how they just, it's essentially a trade deal and they're not really getting paid.
Yeah.
And I guess it's worth it for that player, right? Because they need those shoes throughout the season. I mean, I don't know how many shoes they're going through in a regular 82-game season, but I imagine it's a lot because you compile all the practices that they have on the road and at home.
Well, and the thing is that your feet are so valuable to you when you play basketball. And I remember Isaiah Cannon was the guy that they gave a hard time to. Like, he could have had a deal where, just like I said, it's a trade deal, but you've got Nike and you got all the gear and all the shoes and all the things, and they're comfortable. And instead, And One at the time was trying to make a comeback, and they offered him like 25 or 30 grand. And like every day at practice, he was blowing out sneakers.
Yeah.
And they were just like, bro,
you can't
was
be doing
it really
that.
Worth it to try the extra coin for the fact that your feet are going to be so sore all year wearing those shoes?
I don't get it either. I think your feet are so valuable to you. Like when Michael Jordan went back and wore those ones, I believe it was like the second three championship run. I don't remember if it was the first or the second, but his feet were like bleeding after the game.
It was his last appearance in the Garden because he knew after the Bulls season he was going to quit. So he went back and wore the ones one more time, and either they were the wrong size or something was wrong. And when he got done playing, he had like 55, and when he was done and took them off, his socks were just all blood.
Yeah, which is crazy to me. I would not have wanted to play like that because I've played in bad shoes before, but I've come up in an era where like even the worst shoe that I wore was probably engineered way better than a shoe from, you know, the 80s or the, you know what I mean? Nike had come around so much. Reebok has come around. So, I mean, I just thought that was crazy. If I'm Michael Jordan, I'm taking them off after the first quarter. If there's blood in my socks, I'm taking them off right away.
Let's be honest. Almost all the Jordan shoes, they're for fashion. Almost every Jordan shoe I've ever played in is not comfortable to hoop in.
No. Yeah.
And then you get these, there was a rash of Asian shoe companies a few years ago that was throwing money at every NBA player. And all they were doing was going to the production facilities where Nike at a certain point, like the Kobe's from a couple years ago, and then they stopped making it and they started making something else. And they would go buy up all of those, use the same design, the same look and everything, just take the swoosh off, put their logo on it.
Oh my God.
And so Kyle Lowry got a big deal from either Anta or one of those companies, but I was like, what are you doing? He's like, bro, it's awesome because they're paying me, but until they have a shoe that I will actually approve is comfortable on my feet, and these have been killing my feet, I can still wear Nike. So he was still wearing Nike. He was getting paid by this company until they eventually made a shoe that he felt like he could play in.
That's probably why that's probably because a guy like Kyle Lowry wasn't big enough to get a massive shoe deal, though.
That's why. Like when he was with the Rockets, but what happened too was when Yao signed with the Rockets, it was a residual thing for the rest of the team. Their games were on so frequently over in China that these Chinese shoe companies signed Shane Battier, they signed Luis Scola. All the other guys on the team ended up being offered deals with Chinese shoe companies because they were getting run out of it. Every time the Rockets games were on over in China, everybody's like, oh, he's wearing Anta. Oh, he's wearing, and so they got money.
Leave it to China for mass production. I mean, they'll take anything and mass produce it. And if it's copied, if it's their own design, it's their own design. Leave it to China to do something like that. Let's be real.
All right, so that's the first segment of the program. Lots more to get to. The HR&P listener line open, 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. Otherwise, you can Twitch. You can Twitter. At Twitter, it is going to be at The Producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. Together, we are the Press Box, and we're just getting going. So fasten your seatbelts, and let's go. Right here on ESPN 97.5.
Answer that.
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
AJ Hoffman in the building. Great to always see him well before his show is on the air. We were talking about the expertise that the bench had on today. But other than that, we've got lots more to get to. Look, the Astros did what they had to do last night, and I was very, very pleased. Zach Greinke seems to be, and Tyler had a tweet about this too. It seems like every single time the Astros really need someone just to step up, Zach Greinke's their guy. And last night, Nick, a couple things that really impressed me. One, pitch count was low, went way deeper than I expected him to go. But topping out at 93 miles an hour.
That's crazy.
And we know he's going to give you defense coming off the mound.
Yeah.
Brantley was really basically responsible for the only run he gave up it was unearned because of the error in left field that ended up stretching a single to a double. And then the bats were the bats. The bats all opened up again. The bats were doing what they needed to do.
Did Kyle Tucker do what he needed to do?
You might want to look at the box score.
Yeah. God.
Yeah.
Like, I can never bet on you, Tucker. Like, why would I ever bet on you, Kyle Tucker? Ever. Ever. Like, it's the dumbest thing ever to bet on Kyle Tucker. But you know what? There's no reason to bitch because that was an absolute ass-kicking. Was it 3 runs in the 7th and 3 runs scored in the 8th, if I'm not mistaken? It was back-to-back innings that really, really blew it up. But good for the Astros. I'm glad coming back off of that loss. Really important. Look, we know what they need. The bullpen. Do you know anything about the guy that they called up? I don't even know.
Yeah, he's making his first start in Arlington.
Tyler.
They like him. And we'll see. Again, not exactly what the Astros are worried about. They have a surplus of starting pitching.
Yeah.
Now, we do know that Fromber and Odorizzi are going to, this weekend, are going to make their second AAA start. But at the same time, whether they pan out or not, they still have so many options as starting pitchers. If the kid does well, then you keep him, you know, you keep him on the cusp of and know, hey, he's a guy we can turn to if we need him. More importantly to me is if the kid shows that he can handle tight situations and he can come in and throw strikes, I'd look at him for the bullpen because that's where I have the biggest issue. Paredes, yes, it was his first time back, but he couldn't get anybody out. Sound familiar, Joe Smith? They got too many guys that when they bring him in the game, we're all left holding our breath and hoping that they get through it instead of just knowing, like it used to be with the bullpen when you got to the 7th, 8th, and 9th, that when you turned it over to Presley, when you turned it over to Osuna, when you turned it over to whether it was Will Harris or Davinsky, that they were just going to mow guys down and just get you through. That's not what they have right now. So, Miles Straw had 2 hits last night. Yeah, I'll pad the brakes on him a little bit. I still am going to hold true to the fact that they still need an everyday veteran center fielder. But now I'm going to start focusing more on a bullpen that just seems to have more questions than answers.
Well, at the beginning of the year, we weren't really talking like that. We felt kind of, it was getting to the point where we're kind of feeling comfortable about the bullpen. It wasn't like a terrible situation. So now it just seems like it's a little iffy. Kyle Tucker has had some good games, but in terms of me betting on him, I have the worst luck when it comes down to betting on him and pulling on the trigger. Although, had I pulled the trigger on that bet between the Warriors and the Lakers, I would have won.
We would have pushed the first one, which was excruciating getting through that last night.
Yeah.
And then, you'd have won the Warriors bet. The Lakers looked awful.
I knew Curry would keep it close, dude.
Bro.
I knew he would.
But let's talk about this, because we talked about the fact he was going to get double teams. We talked about the fact that he was the head of the snake was going to be the focus.
Yeah.
To have so many different looks being thrown at him defensively, he kept moving further and further out to shoot the percentage he shot and score the points that he scored. He is so much more than a shooter. That guy is phenomenal.
He's the closest thing to a video game and being an absolute cheat code in terms of an individual accolades. The guy from an offensive standpoint and from a three-point shooting standpoint is just absolutely unreal. And they were throwing everything at him. And no matter what, he would find a way to create space. And even if he didn't, he was still hitting shots. Did you see that big three-pointer at the end of the first half?
Oh,
like, what was that?
Triple teamed, and he does the jab, step, step back, off balance, fading towards the bench. And the minute it left his hands, there were so many of his threes last night. The minute it left his hands, he turned and already knew it was going through.
It's just unbelievable what he did. At the end of the first half, making that three-pointer triple team, to me, that was just like, all right, there's no way Steph Curry is going to come out of that first half and go into the second half and not be just as hot as he was. There's no way. You know, and then the other thing that aggravated me was Anthony Davis was just nowhere to be found in the first half. So now you have Steph Curry going off and Anthony Davis is not holding his weight.
Or LeBron.
No.
They were three for their first like 18 or 19 in the first half. Both of them were awful. And then it was kind of like a tag team. AD got it going in the third, tagged off to LeBron, who got it going in the fourth. You're LeBron James, by the way. Michael Jordan would never tell you, oh, I saw three rims. Oh, I stayed on the floor for 4.5 minutes. Michael Jordan would have just told you, I'm the best. I do what I am supposed to do.
I want to really expand on the whole eye poke thing. That's why I did. I have some audio clips and we'll take it. Okay. Yeah, I completely agree with you, though.
Let me give you Curry's line, by the way.
Go ahead.
So 12 of 23 overall from the floor. So he shoots 50% from the floor. That is the gold standard, right? We always say 40% from three, 50% from the field, 90% from the line. Okay? 7 of 8 from the line. So
you got that 90%. Part done. Yep.
Nick, he was 6 of 9 from three, and I would bet that at least four of the six were contested and from several feet behind the three-point line.
Yeah. I mean, you got to go to the shot. Well, the shot chart won't even show you how many were contested, but still, the way he's able to shoot a shot while being contested, it makes him the most special. That's what makes him so special. Like, he practices so well with the idea of, I have to be able to shoot this shot with this guy in my face. He might be taller than me. He deals with mismatches. He deals with guys that are taller than him. Now, sometimes it works to his advantage, right? Because they don't have the lateral speed that they need to cover someone like Steph Curry. But sometimes it's not. Like, if they get back on the perimeter quick enough, sometimes Steph Curry can't just throw up that three-point shot and expect it to not either get blocked or impacted or changed. And so that's why he has to either dribble more or create more space. So that guy's unreal.
You know, the other thing about him, though, Nick, is and Clyde was a master at this, that when you say he practices this, he practices what Clyde used to practice, the unthinkable English. Like, Clyde would, at practice, would work on spinning the ball well away from the square at certain points in the backboard where if he spun it hard enough, it could hit the glass outside of the square on the backboard and still find a way to get in the basket. Couple of those layups last night where he was contested and went reverse, and just the way he contorted his wrist to spin it with reverse English, so when it hit the board, it just kind of like a golf ball. It stopped instead of continuing to roll through.
Yeah, that's insane. The fact that he did that intentionally and executed it, that's insane.
The running push floater off the glass when they needed it in the fourth quarter. I mean, he's another level that, again, because he gets so much credit as a shooter, I don't think they give him enough credit as being – and overall, one of the great players in the game.
Charlie went as far as saying the best offensive player ever. So, he went, or at least offensive player, best offensive player playing
now, who
in
would
today's
you say?
Game.
Who would you say?
Offensively? Yeah. Can Jordan do what he did? When you say offensive, aren't you saying scoring points?
So here's the knock on Jordan. He wasn't a three-point shooter.
That's right.
And it wasn't. And at that point, the game wasn't focused as much on shooting threes. To me, the combination, when I think offensive talent, I think Kevin Durant, because you can't find a 7-footer that can put it on the floor, can shoot it over everybody, has range from 35 feet in, can also go to the basket when he needs to, can finish, and again, shoot everything at a high percentage, threes, field goals, free throws. I think, to me, the entire package offensively, I think it's Kevin Durant. LeBron has question marks at the free throw line and a lot of times from three. Steph is a major three-point shooter, and he's a shooting machine. Steph is where you start looking at a point guard with only 3 assists.
Right, and that's the problem, because you do have to incorporate assists in offense, I feel like, right? If you're going to say offensive player.
From a guard, especially for a guard.
From a point guard or a guard, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, it's a debate that could be had, and you have to remember that the era and the fact that it was a completely different game. Michael Jordan didn't have to be a three-point shooting king in that day and age, because he could score. He could use the mid-range. He could penetrate to the basket. He can score from the free throw line. So, I mean, it was just a different era. But that was some good basketball. The other game I didn't care. The only really game I really cared about was the Lakers and Warriors, because I really wanted to see if the Warriors would win that game and force the Lakers to play their way back into the playoffs after losing them. But, hey, now poor Chris Paul gets to face the Los Angeles Lakers.
If you're a betting man, Mr. Betting Man, who are you taking in that series?
It's the Lakers.
I am too.
It's the Lakers. I love Chris Paul.
Totally agree.
How many times have I talked about Devin Booker when Devin Booker wasn't even a story? How many times have I brought up Devin Booker saying, man, that guy can ball? The guy's an unbelievable player. Chris Paul makes any team better, and he's done it for the third or fourth time now. Fourth team that he's actually made better. You know what I mean? Or fifth team.
Yeah, fifth team.
But there's nothing they can do. And look, LeBron is healthy enough. I know we're talking about the ankle and the poor guy with the eye poke. And boy, was he on the ground for a really long time, bro. Get your ass up.
Milk the hell out of it.
Get your ass up, LeBron.
Then I saw three rims.
Yeah.
Really? Aren't you supposed to say, that's what I do. It was crunch time. It was winning time. The shot clock was running down. I did what I was supposed to do.
He kind of said that at the end of the game, but nah. But he sat there and laid on the court. Like, his eyeball was just hanging out of his head. Like, it was just like, get your ass up.
Need 18 people to put drops in your eyes.
Yeah, that was another thing. The saline thing. Oh, my God. That was, the whole team got in on it. Like, the drama, dude.
It's just, it's so frustrating. But, again, it's how the game has, I guess, devolved to where even superstars get to, I mean, look at how many superstars are whiny bitches these days.
It's unreal.
It's not like it used to be that way. Now I'm Clint Eastwood. All right, get off my lawn, but stay on the radio. Lots more to get to as Nick wants to get to this eye poking. I got some comments on it too, I think. And I also got the unsung hero for the Lakers last night. Maybe we'll agree. We got that to talk about and a whole lot more as we continue to roll on. It always involves you guys. We love having you be a part of the program. 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. Otherwise, it's Twitch and Twitter, and it's all right here on ESPN 97.5.
Listening to the Press Box on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
So who's these bitches on the text line? They're mad I'm pooping on LeBron for being
They're not mad at you. They're mad at LeBron. It's like there are certain topics that we get to, and every time we bring it up, it is like a lightning storm. And the hate that comes out of the woodwork for LeBron. Look, I'm not hating on LeBron James. I'm not taking away his long laundry list of accomplishments. What I'm saying is, as a superstar, as the lead dog in this league, no one's giving you a sympathy vote, bro.
Dude, you're massive. Dude, you should be able to take more damage than the average player anyway, bro. Like, your frame is just insane. And you didn't have to be on the floor all that long for the stupid eye poke. And if it was really that bad, honestly, dude, when you get a really bad eye poke, you don't even stand up upright. You're always just holding, you have your face in front of your eyes the entire time. Like, dude, he's an absolute baby. And he did milk it.
Yeah.
He milked it. The whole team did. The saline drops that I totally forgot about until Joel just mentioned it in the last segment, he absolutely milked it. Now, is he the best player in the game? Probably, yeah. Absolutely. Is he on the best team? Most probably. We'll find out.
Yeah. But at the same time, and again, because I hate the whole comparison of who's better. The thing is, even though eras were different and it was a lot tougher league back when MJ played, but take MJ out of the equation. Put Kobe Bryant in the equation. Go to Vanessa Bryant's Hall of Fame speech. Do you think that Kobe Bryant would have been on the floor for 4.5 minutes? Do you think that Kobe Bryant after the game would have said, I saw three rims and I was just dazed and confused? No, Kobe would have said, you know what? Winning time, bro. That's what we do.
Here's one of the post-game clips.
Well, only time will tell, but you know, it was good to, to get that first punch. They say everybody, let's say Mike. Well, the first thing I did when KCP kicked it out, I looked at the shot clock. I saw it was, had to get it up, at least get up on the rim. Second thing I saw was three rims,
Stop it. Get out of here.
Three rims, he saw.
Aim for the one in the middle, just like when you're drunk. I mean.
Look, maybe he did. Look, I'm not. Look, only he could really, really, really tell how bad that eye poke was, but. Even if it was bad, you stayed on the floor that long. You got the shot anyway. And did you see Steph Curry's face after he hit that shot?
That was awesome. Because Steph's done that to enough teams and guys over the years, too. And Steph at the end of the half, and every big shot when Steph celebrates. But the fact that he had to eat some crow and turn around and go, you got me there.
Oh, yeah. He looked right at him. I was like, really, bro? Like, how the hell were you supposed to hit that? Like, you were not supposed to make that. And how many times does LeBron James make a three-pointer from that far out? And, boy, did he just release it right on time. I mean, that shot clock was right there.
Now, let's get to the eye thing, Nick, because you said you have a lot to get to. I'm interested in your take because I was surprised at what Steve Jabby said. I was not surprised at what Van Gundy said because he is old school. But to me, I didn't see what they said they saw. I didn't see someone go straight up and down. I saw Draymond Green go right to the face. I thought it was a flagrant foul.
Oh, you did?
I did.
I didn't. I see. And the thing is, the broadcast was absolutely convinced like you are. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was a common foul. I don't think he was trying to make a dirty play. I don't think he was trying to be excessive. And I think this is a part of the reason why the wussification in the NBA continues. I'm mm-hmm. super glad that the referee didn't call it a flagrant foul, because when I was listening to the broadcast, I was like, these fools are really making it sound like the ref is going to make it a flagrant foul. That wasn't a flagrant foul, in my opinion.
Now, wait a minute. Here's where I'm going to correct you. This is why I said it was a flagrant foul.
By the rules.
By the rules. It doesn't mean that by the naked eye or saying he looked like he violently did that. The rule clearly states, and when I was doing Rockets games, this is something we had to go back to. Look, no matter what your personal opinion of how it looked, the rule clearly states anything above the shoulders, head and neck area, when contact is made, especially when it affects the landing, and he did land awkwardly,
yeah,
that's when you have the rule comes into play of a flagrant foul.
Yeah, and that's his mistake. If that's in the rule book, that's on the officials. And I might even argue that if the NBA is taking it out of the referee's hand, because really, that should be a subjective situation. You go back, you look at the replay, and it should be something at your discretion. And hopefully, it's the right one. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is, they can't leave it up to these refs, because how many times have they botched the instant replays and everything else? So I don't think they want to leave it in their hands if they absolutely don't have it. But if you're going to put that rule in, what's going to happen is you're going to get a whole bunch of calls that are called flagrants, and it has happened in the past, that are not supposed to be flagrants. And you're awarding the team a technical foul, a free throw shot, and the ball. So that's just too much.
But here's where I would say, Nick, other than how they do it in the regular season and going back to Secaucus, New Jersey, and having the officials all weigh in, I think what weighed heavy on that call last night is that's a game changer. We're talking about less than a minute to play. We're talking about, like you said, two free throws in the ball. Basically, Golden State would be behind the eight ball. And I think they didn't want the officials to decide the game, because I think if that's a regular season game on TNT on a Thursday night, that's a flagrant foul. I think that at least from a league perspective, I respect the fact that they didn't want the officials to decide the game on a call like that, so they didn't call it a flagrant
because
foul.
Because it was such an impactful and meaningful
absolutely.
Game.
Okay. Though by the rules, even if you want to rewrite that rule next year in the competition committee, the rule as it states right now, that's a flagrant foul. I appreciate the fact they didn't make it one, because it would have really decided the game instead of letting the players and the fans watching it go. Let it play out.
And that's why I'm glad we're having the discussion, because that's exactly the point I was going to make. I, from the naked eye, I don't think it's a flagrant foul. And they talked about it, how it was in the rule book, and they brought on, I forgot the guy's name, and to talk about it.
Steve Jabby.
But that's fine. But like, what happens is when you have a rule in the rule book that applies every time a particular situation happens, sometimes it's not going to work in your favor every time. That's just a fact. Uh-huh. If you're going to make a rule like that, guess what? You're putting the referee in a position to make a wrong call eventually. It's going to happen. And the fan that's not super educated about all the rules is not going to know that. They're just going to say, you know what? That wasn't a foul. That wasn't a flagrant foul. That was a common foul in my mind. So, I mean.
Now, here's an interesting text, Nick, and I like this. How could LeBron see three rims and not three shot clocks? He only saw one shot clock, but he saw three rims.
Well, I mean, he didn't say that he didn't see that. I mean,
I know, but I think it was funny because, again, don't even mention it. You finished the game. You didn't need the 18 people attending to you. You didn't need 4.5 minutes on the floor.
No.
But you know what? You made a big shot, and it was at the right time. Credit to you for that. But at the same time, don't give me all the other theatrics.
Yeah, that three-point shot was just insane. I mean, you look at all the three-point shots and the degree of difficulty that Steph Curry was making throughout the game, and then Steph Curry has to be looking at LeBron's like, you just made one of those. I've been doing this the entire game, and you just screwed us off of one of them. I've been doing this to your entire team for nearly 48 minutes, and you make the one that counts. And you know what? He did. He made the one that counts. So good for the Lakers, not so good for the Warriors, but I imagine the Warriors will make it in the playoffs anyway.
I agree with you.
So it doesn't really matter.
Now, so we got Phoenix Lakers. You and I both think Lakers win that series.
I still think Phoenix takes a couple games.
Oh, I don't disagree with that, especially at home. The other game last night, you know what, Nick, reminded me of an 80s NBA game. It was a slugfest. It was like 67-62 for about 5 minutes. But yet, you know what I really liked and I appreciated? The referees let them play. They weren't calling ticky-tack fouls.
They weren't.
I think the first foul call in either the third or the fourth quarter was about 7.5 minutes in. I can appreciate that. I love, and I'm gonna give you a little did you know that's going to bother you, I think, as a Rockets fan. Dylan Brooks played his ass off last night. Dylan Brooks was drafted by your Houston Rockets, and Daryl Morey traded him. So Dylan Brooks was a massive reason along for why Memphis played. Because John Morant has got an issue making free throws.
Yeah,
John Morant's got an issue making shots at clutch time. As much as they've praised him, but that's a good win for them. I expected them to get that. I don't expect them to beat the Warriors. So there's that, and we can get to more of that. Again, I want to get your MVP of the game last night in the Laker game because I got one that you might not see coming. White Magic, you want to get in here. You want to talk about the MVP. I thought you wanted to get you want to talk about AJ before he gets out of here, but you want to talk about the MVP. What's going on?
Well, we'll get to that. A couple things, gentlemen. First off, that was a flagrant foul. Draymond had no verticality there.
Correct.
His arms went right into the face. There was no principle of verticality. That's a flagrant. Secondly, your unsung MVPs, those are KCP and Caruso. Even though Steph got off like crazy, they were still throwing him crazy looks that was made it difficult for him. Third, the NBA needs a most outstanding player. Steph Curry has been amazing this year, and they need to get rid of this MVP debate by just making a most outstanding player name it after Kobe. But that's just my personal opinion.
I like it.
And fourthly, yeah, glad AJ's leaving, and I'll hang up and listen.
See, I like it, Nick, because we've never really, you know, my big thing has always been criteria. Because when Daryl was the GM of the Rockets, if Harden was in the mix and the Rockets had a better record, then record should matter. If the Rockets had a bad record, the Warriors
his
had a good record,
changed, didn't
then
it?
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
So I think the league, one way or another, needs to step up and say, this is the criteria. It's all individual-based, or it's team and individual-based. And I don't mind what – I like White Magic's suggestion. And since we just named an award after Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, why don't we name one after Kobe?
With it. I'm not really upset that – to name a lot of things after Kobe. I really don't. It doesn't bother me. I'm not upset if they don't, but I'm not upset if they do. So I think that's cool. The most outstanding player, do you think there should be more than one award
yeah,
for all that?
You're right. The one thing is that, as I was saying all that I think that would take away the luster of the MVP.
Replace MVP.
No, I think he was saying add it. Add it.
Okay.
But even still, now instead of the premier award, because we think about it, when they made the award show or when they gave out awards every postseason for the regular season, MVP was the last award given. Which is more important now? Most outstanding? Most valuable?
Yeah.
But I'm open to discussion for that. I like it. All right, thank you, Magic, for the call. Lots more to get to in the first hour of the program, and lots more to get to overall, as there's tons of topics to discuss. Nick, your Astros, 2:37 first pitch, a day game today. So you don't have to wait all night after the Zach Greinke performance. You got Luis Garcia, Cole Irvin, as the Astros and the A's play from the Bay. That and a whole lot more coming up as we'll give you updates throughout the program. It's the Press Box on ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Someone asked, would Westbrook win it every year, though, if it was most outstanding player? No, he wouldn't, because as good as Westbrook has been on triple-doubles, Westbrook ain't doing Steph Curry things. Westbrook ain't doing 46, 50, going off like that on a regular basis. And the 10-plus three-point games. And Westbrook's got Bradley Beal. I would argue, as good as Wiggins was last night, Steph, honestly, Charles makes fun of him and Draymond gets upset, but Draymond is a triple single. He's not going to knock your socks off with stuff at a box score.
No. And he kind of knows it. Like, he's really tough and I think mentally stronger when he's on the defensive side of the ball anyway. Because when I feel like his mental toughness just goes down just a slight bit when he has the ball in his hand and he's on offense. You just don't know what you're going to get out of him from an offensive standpoint. But the all-around game of Draymond Green, I appreciate so much. Regardless of his personality and what the Warriors have done to the Rockets, you got to appreciate his value. I mean, there's always room for a guy like that. Look at Dennis Rodman. There's a million examples where you get a guy that's just an all-around tough player, rebounds, plays defense, annoys you, is not mentally weak. We'll talk mess. We'll get you off of your game. Those are all things Dennis Rodman did. You know what I mean? He did that. I'm not comparing him to a Dennis Rodman, but he's similar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And again, that kind of brings me back. Ben Wallace was like that too. And Ben Wallace was always known as mentally strong, super tough anchor of the defense. But I still go back and say, even on a Dennis Rodman, I'm not convinced he's a Hall of Famer. I'm convinced he was a really good player in this league. I'm convinced Ben Wallace was a really good player in this league. But to me, he was one-dimensional, and he was...
But he has more of an offensive... He was more offensive than, let's say, someone like an Ori or a Ben Wallace, right? From a...
Who, Rodman?
Or Green.
I think Rodman was as challenged offensively as any big-time player in the league because he couldn't make free throws. He really, once he got all tatted up and everything like that, something changed. He couldn't make jump shots. He got a lot of garbage rebounds and putbacks. But kind of like Ben Wallace. Ben Wallace, same thing. Couldn't make free throws, couldn't make jump shots. Defensively, you'll never argue against either guy.
Nah.
But is defensive presence enough to be in the Hall of Fame?
I guess it depends on how much you value defense. And look, I'm a guy that does.
Okay.
That does, but not as much as offense. I think if you're an offensive player, it holds more weight.
But just like we were saying with criteria with MVP, the criteria for the Hall of Fame should be you're an all-around player. Some people say five tools, but regardless of how you look at it, you can pass, you can shoot, you can defend, you can rebound, you block shots, and you can impact a game. I think that you take shooting, passing, and a lot of things out with Rodman and Ben Wallace. That's why I don't think they're Hall of Famers.
No, and you know what? Maybe if they did state that as the criteria that you mentioned, because they don't. There is no clear-cut criteria for this. But if they did state that as the clear-cut criteria, maybe you would see less Hall of Famers. Maybe you would see people. Like, I was telling you about LaMarcus Aldridge, and Charlie was like, no way. I'm like, look at his numbers. If you look at some of the other guys and their numbers, why would LaMarcus Aldridge not be a Hall of Famer? Like, he was around long
great
enough.
Numbers. Yeah, I mean,
he was around
consistently
long enough.
Great numbers. He was Portland before Damon Lillard.
I mean, and not only that, like, if you're going to put in guys that don't average nearly as much as LaMarcus Aldridge into the Hall of Fame, to me, that in a way is an indirect way of setting the criteria without setting the criteria. You're kind of saying, well, this is the precedent here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that especially in this class coming in particular, there are several guys that I would deem very good, but I don't know that I would deem them Hall of Fame. And this goes even to where you and I, you know this. I said, I don't think Tracy McGrady's a Hall of Famer.
You don't?
I don't think Chris Webber's a Hall of Famer. Now, I see the impact, the Fab Five, what he did at Michigan. If it's just the overall body of work in the Basketball Hall of Fame, I can see Chris Webber. But, I mean, Tracy McGrady, because he had what, scoring? Because he had scoring titles and such, never really had any playoff runs, never had anything close to a championship.
What really hurt McGrady, too, is he had five really bad seasons.
Had the injury plague, the microfracture stuff where he missed time.
Where he wasn't breaking double digits in scoring, but before that, he was killing it. That's the reason why, and McGrady's in. He's already a Hall of Famer. So. Well,
someone, to your point, said Aldridge didn't win. That's a fair point. He didn't win a title, but at the same, he made all star teams, he made playoff teams. So I don't mind that discussion.
But who do you think has better stats, LaMarcus Aldridge or Tracy McGrady? Because I'm looking up LaMarcus's stats right now.
Offensively, I think Tracy McGrady did because he has the ball in his hands more. Because he's a guard as opposed to a guy that you got to dump it down to on the post. He became more of a 3-point shooter later in his career, but I just think because of the frequency of touches, I would say T-Mac over Aldridge. You tell me if I'm wrong.
Well, he had seven seasons where he averaged at least 20 points a game. And then he had like another five or six seasons, maybe even more, where he averaged close to 20 points per game. As opposed to Tracy McGrady, I mean, he had 26, 25, 32, 28, 25, 24, 24. You know what I mean? So I can see why McGrady got in to a certain extent. But I, you know what? Even Tracy McGrady was absolutely shocked because I remember when it was announced to him, it was Rachel Nichols who did it on the show and said, "You're in the Hall of Fame." And he's like, "No." She's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "No way." He didn't even believe it.
Yeah, he didn't expect it. Now, this is how you get blocked on text line. You say, basically, shut the F up, Joel. If either of them were Rockets, you'd be screaming from the mountaintops for them to be elected. They deserve to be in before Ori. I've already said Ori doesn't deserve to be in. I've already said Tracy McGrady doesn't deserve to be in. I'm on the fence on Dikembe Mutombo being in. So if you want to do that and start with that little line, you could find yourself on the outside looking in. I'm honest. I'm going to call it like I see it. And that's why I said, and other people are backing me up on the one-dimensional. Dikembe, an unbelievable defensive player. Offensively and free throw shooting again.
Yeah, he lacked big time.
Is in question.
Massively in question.
And then again, and the other criteria they won't admit, but it is a factor, and this is White Magic's point the other day, though it shouldn't be the only or the prerequisite to get in, winning a title helps a lot.
It does. It does, but
in Robert
Horry's case, I don't think it should.
Right. And again, they're counterbalanced. Robert Horry has all the titles, but doesn't have all the stats. Other guys, like Iverson, has all the stats, doesn't have the titles. But Allen Iverson did it for such a long period of time, he deserves to be in. It's a matter of opinion. So shut the F up. all right, 1 hour in the book.
Let them know, Joel.
Because they're idiots. One in the books, two to go. Second hour of the show coming up next. Shout out to our boy AR Platinum listening again today. We appreciate you. We've got lots to get to. And, of course, it always includes you, unless you're a dumbass on text. 713-780-3776. Call or text. Hit us up on Twitch and Twitter. The dialogue and the discussion continues during the breaks on Twitch. We love that. We're going to continue to do that. Back with more. It's Press Box ESPN.